You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. Today is Friday, April 3rd, 2020, and it is time for our daily update on preparation for coronavirus in the community. Joined on the phone lines by Petersburg Medical Center and the borough. Let's start off with incident commander with the borough, Carl Hagerman. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Joe.
Well, lots to talk about today. Let's start off with the borough assembly is meeting Monday. They'll be talking about some impacts from coronavirus and having a special meeting as well, looking at a payout to local businesses. Can you talk a little bit about those things?
Well, so the assembly will be meeting on Monday, and that meeting is at noon. So I think we're going to forego this call-in show on that date, just so everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
So the assembly agenda, you know, they will be getting an update from the EOC on the objectives that we have and the things that we've been doing to meet those objectives. And then they'll have a special meeting right after that to consider a proposal from the PEDC to utilize money from the Economic Development Fund to provide various kinds of relief to local businesses in the short term as we all wait for the federal dollars to become available.
Okay. And creation of a new disaster fund, that's in anticipation of federal money at some point being paid out to the community, right?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay.
We have a system of expense codes that we use in case of disaster, but the money to use at that time needs to be allocated by the assembly, and then all the expenses will be forwarded to the state for reimbursement at a later date.
Okay. Carl, the borough yesterday put out a press release to clarify no cases of COVID-19, I should say, in the community at the moment. The state had been reporting the prior death that happened in Washington State as a Petersburg case.
Yes, that's what happened. The state had updated their website, and in that process had included had counted that previous case in Washington State, a Petersburg resident that unfortunately passed away with COVID-19. They had counted that individual on this updated website, and people in Petersburg are watching closely, and several people did see that number was updated, and the concern started to grow. So it was made apparent to me that what was going on, and I forwarded that information to the hospital and the public health nurse immediately. And they did great work tracking it down and confirming that was, in fact, the previous Petersburg resident that was in Washington State and not a current case of COVID in Petersburg. There is no confirmed cases of COVID in Petersburg at this time.
Okay. What other messages from the borough do you want to get out at this point?
Today I wanted to touch on the travel declaration forms that are now being handed out at the airport by volunteers. The folks that come into town and fill those out, those are for interstate travel, basically coming in from either Canada or the lower 48. Those people are required to fill out a form that says that they will quarantine themselves in a space. The residents, most likely, they're coming back and they live here. They're signing to the fact that they will. People that come in and have a hotel room or a B&B set up, they need to quarantine in those locations. And if they don't follow through with that quarantine, it really opens themselves up to a lot of trouble. A $25,000 fine, a year in jail, and being charged with a Class A misdemeanor. The state now has a website, an email address, investigations@alaska.gov, for people to report violations of this. And so I just want to point that out to folks, that it's not just a paper form that doesn't mean anything. It is a legal document that says that they will quarantine themselves. And they really need to do that.
And that's being handed out at the airport and elsewhere?
At this point, it's just the airport.
Just the airport, and it's just for people coming from out of state. Is that a honor thing? People are being asked whether they're coming from out of state or from Wrangell or somewhere else in state?
It is pretty much an honor thing. They need to fill out the form. It's also available online, and you can submit it online to the state. But the form asks you where you've been in the last 14 days, and you're required to report your whereabouts.
Okay. All right. Had more questions from people about seasonal workforce expect this summer. Have you learned anything more about the local seafood processors and their plans for bringing in people to town?
Yeah, both the larger processors in town, Trident and Icicle, are continue to work on their plans. Trident is purposely going to bring their workforce in a couple weeks ahead of when they work, so they can be quarantined in their bunkhouse. Icicle is much the same, although I don't have 100% confirmation on that. They are thinking in the same manner, I believe. Presently, their workforce, they're working out all the different details of how to process fish while observing social distancing and workflow in their canneries. So it's they're doing a lot of work right now, and I do think that their heart's in the right place, and they're trying to make the plans that they need to so that their workforce is protected, the community is protected. I know there's a lot of concern about those folks when they come to town, but just know that the processors are working very hard to make sure that they can do their work, but also protect the community.
Okay. Other messages from the borough at this point?
I think that's about it. I encourage everybody to listen in on Monday to the assembly meeting and get the reports from the EOC and the hospital at that time.
Okay. Thanks, Carl. I'll let you go and bring in the Petersburg Medical Center at this point. Hello, folks. Can you hear me?
Yep, we're online here.
Hi, Phil. Welcome to the discussion. What's the latest from Petersburg Medical Center?
Yeah, thanks. Not a lot to report or that's new. I mean, obviously, we talked about masking protocol yesterday, and we implemented that, and that's been going pretty well within our facility to make sure everyone is masking. We did hear from the state that is something that's recommended generally, whether general population and other businesses. So we want to make sure that people get informed about that. We did provide a video, internal video, on how to properly mask, and we might be extending some of that on the exterior side too if people need to know the process for masking. So We'll get as much information as we can out there. As far as tests, I'm going to ask Lori to provide some detail into that.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Joe. I'm sorry. I'm pretty hard to understand with my mask on, but I'll try and speak up. So we've collected 44 total tests. We have 33 negative tests and 11 pending tests. So it seems like what we're doing is pretty good. Everybody seems to be doing their best to socially distance themselves and really stay in place and hunker down, and we at the hospital appreciate that. I do want to mention that since we did implement the masking protocol, and as you know, we screen everybody that comes into the hospital, it is extraordinarily helpful if people call to schedule routine labs and imaging. They can call 772-5756, and they can speak with Elisa Lund. She will be happy to schedule you. That way we can do all your paperwork ahead of time, and just as soon as you get screened and masked, we can escort you either into our phlebotomy room to get your blood drawn or into the x-ray room to take your pictures or for whatever service you might need.
Okay. And a question from the Petersburg Pilot. This might be for Jennifer Briner if she's there. This is a question. Should a COVID-19 patient decline the use of a ventilator, what help can be provided to address breathing difficulties along with other symptoms?
If a patient made an advance directive that said they did not want to be intubated or ventilated, then we as a facility would continue to provide them comfort care pain relief and try to make them as comfortable as they can be, still provide them oxygen, and do everything short of intubating and putting them on a ventilator.
Okay. How about the distinction in masks we should make, too? Also, the state had mentioned they want to save medical masks for medical professionals and homemade stuff for the rest of the populace.
Yes, and I did bring a few tips for people who do want to use a mask, which we are thinking is a good idea. It's really important that you clean your hands, you wash your hands or sanitize before you put your mask on. And any time you touch it, and for those of us who have been wearing them for many days, I can't tell you how many times you want to touch your mask or actually do. And so you have to, if you're going to wear a mask, if you touch it, you have to wash your hands. You always want to wear the masks. If they're the homemade ones and they're double layered, so they have like patterns on both sides, you want to wear the one same side in all the time. You don't want to flip it around. You always, like I said, you want to avoid touching the mask. You need to keep it clean and dry. If it becomes wet or soiled, you need to, for a homemade mask, you would need to have it laundered before you can use it again. And so if people are choosing to use masks, they will need several because they will need to be laundered at least every day and then anytime it gets wet or soiled. When you are wearing a mask, it has to cover your nose and mouth and chin completely. You can't push it down below your nose or pull it up. You can't push it down below your chin so it's like a little strap. You have to keep it on as intended. When you need to eat or drink, there are some good ways to take off your masks. You always want to avoid touching the actual mask itself and use only the bands. If you have to take off your mask to have a drink or meal, you put a paper towel or something clean down, take your mask off, lay it on top of that paper towel, eat, drink, do whatever, wash your hands, and then replace it onto your face. And then you take that paper towel away, and then you should clean the surface that it was laying on. And like I said, masks should be, they should not be worn for multiple days in a row without laundering them. So those are just some tips for mask wearers out there.
And I had read that they're really no use for just out when you're outside and far away from people. They're not helping to wear a mask. So
no, if you're taking a walk and you're by yourself, there's no need to put it on. But if you're going to the grocery store or you're having to deliver somebody their mail or delivering them food or something, then that's a good time that you would mask. Anytime that you will have the potential of it to be within 6 feet of somebody or go into an entity that other people have been in or may be in shortly.
Okay. And we should highlight wearing a mask then doesn't give you the green light to go within 6 feet. You should still keep that distance up.
No, it's an added precaution. It's to prevent any droplet particles that may come out of your mouth during talking, laughing, coughing, to hit a substance or to hit a something that somebody can touch and then, you know, touch their eye or their mouth or their nose with.
Okay. Other messages from the medical center at this point?
I don't think we have any, but Aaron from Public Health is here with us.
Okay, great. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. Welcome back to the conversation. What's the latest from you?
Well, this morning I got to attend a presentation from a doctor from the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and he gave a really good presentation on modeling of how COVID is presenting itself in Alaska, and they specifically look at Anchorage, and then they look at Alaska in general. And so we just wanted to kind of talk to people about what at least I wanted to talk to people about what I saw in that presentation. And we really have not hit the peak here in Alaska, let alone in Petersburg, obviously. And the models that they are doing, models are not perfect, but they do give us an idea of what we potentially might see. And Alaska has the advantage of the fact that a lot of countries and states have already encountered similar things to what we're going to be encountering. So they can take the data and information and tailor it so that it's more reflective of what we're seeing here in Alaska. And the models themselves in Anchorage, they're seeing the potential if we continue doing the things that we're doing, which is social distancing, which is not necessarily having kids in school, which is keeping people that have a positive and their close contacts at home, those kind of things. If we continue to do those things, Anchorage is looking at potentially possibly having their peak around mid-May, their initial peak. But this thing could last for a while. As the cases go down, you could have low-level cases that aren't necessarily being picked up. And if we take away these measures too soon, then you could see a spike that could be even bigger than the initial spike that we had to begin with. I hope that made sense.
It did, yes. Yeah. And we're hearing about resurgence in places in China as well.
Yeah, exactly. You're hearing like in Hong Kong and other places where they took away those measures that were helping keep the infection down, and then all of a sudden they saw a spike again. So we just really want people to know that this is not something that's going to be over with and really quickly. You know, this is going to take some time, and we want to just be safe and protect ourselves as best we can. So if you get a chance, you can go on to you can Google University of Alaska Anchorage COVID and model, and you can actually look at the study that they did that they presented to Anchorage and to the state of Alaska. And it's got some really interesting information in it. So if you're a data geek and like to look at that kind of stuff, or if you're just interested in this, it talks about the importance of having shelter in place and closures of non-essential businesses and closures of schools and how all this does impact a community and the state. And so it's just really important that we all take these measures seriously and do our part to protect one another.
The state has also just put up a new mapping site with where cases are in the state as well as the overall numbers. And we've linked that on our website here if you can't find it. Otherwise, it's right on the state's main page. And that's pretty helpful information. Any other notes from you, Erin?
Well, I think Jennifer wanted to mention something, too.
Hey, I had a few more things about masking. One is if you take your mask off because you're going to go on a walk, and it's good to put it, like, in a dry paper bag or, like I said, on a piece of paper towel or something. Do not put it in a Ziploc. It needs to stay warm. It needs to stay dry. So plastic storage bags are not appropriate for masks. And then when they are laundered, you should be washing them on hot and a full dry on with high heat. So heat is good for these, but moisture is not.
Okay. Great. Hang on the line, if you would. Medical Center, we're going to have Erica Klute-Painter at the school district join in the conversation. Hi, Erica.
The conversation. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What's the latest?
Good. What's the latest?
The latest is that we are all trying to kind of spread the word amongst our staff and really probably the next step to our families about the information regarding the latest recommendations with the masking. So I always appreciate hearing from our local medical professionals as well as, you know, listening to Dr. Zink last night and just trying to keep up with the latest recommendations. So we're keeping each other safe and as healthy as possible. So we are kind of working on that, and that's probably going to continue to be a need some of our local volunteers out there who are interested. There's some good patterns and things out there that I know Liz Bacon has shared and that are shared on the COVID site. So anyway, we're just trying to follow the rules as best we can. Also just want to recognize at the end of this very first week of officially kind of back to school in the district, I just want to recognize the incredible work that our students have done. They, especially middle and high school, trying to work through their tech needs first this week has been incredible. Listening to stories and just comments from students, from parents, from teachers about the, you know, the challenges. There's a few challenges, of course, but really the successes that have happened this week have been amazing. The kids have been amazing, logging in, engaging, having fun, testing out some different ways of communicating with each other. Teachers are taking this on as a huge opportunity. There's a lot of innovation happening. So in the midst of, you know, some pretty challenging times, I just am actually very inspired. So I just want to say that out loud, and also to recognize the amazing amount of work and support that our parents and families are providing to their kids out there. So just a big thank you to everyone for that, and hope everybody gets outside to get some fresh air this weekend. Friday meal signups, you need to find that link on the website or in the bulletin or on Facebook. Sign up for next week, please. Carly is also just emailing people who are already on the list, just to, as a reminder. If you have some sort of tech problem or you can't get the link or whatever, you know, call the school district number and get to Carly or get to one of the office staff. They will help you. So don't not sign up because of that. We want you to be on the list. And, oh, my gosh, huge numbers again this week. I mean, like, oh, my gosh. I feel like several thousand meals between breakfast and lunches have been delivered. So just incredible work of our food service crew. So huge props there. Also, we are trying to spin up an opportunity for people to have access to our school libraries. For those of us that are a little older, we remember the bookmobiles of rural areas. And that is something that you may be seeing. We are coming up with a plan. So stay tuned for information from Ms. Cotta and on all of our social media and such. And we may be having a little drop-off plan for as early as next Friday, April 10th. So we're excited about that. It'll be a combination of working with our food service bus and then possibly adding one of our activity buses to become a bookmobile. So we are seeing a lot of innovation coming out, and we really are just very proud of our teachers and our students and our families. So I think that's it for me, unless you have a question.
What's week two look like? Elementary school rollout going well?
Yeah, week two is we are ramping up hot and heavy with technology, getting prepared for our K-2 students with iPads, getting them all prepared to launch as safely and with as few glitches as possible. So that's the work that's going on behind the scenes. And then we are looking at deploying Chromebooks to our third, fourth, and fifth grade students. And our goal is Wednesday for all of that, but it may be sooner. So families and parents, stay tuned. And that will, of course, help with additional ways to communicate with our families and share information back and forth. But people have been super creative this week. So we really appreciate everybody's patience and just the outreach and some pretty fun videos floating back and forth between teachers and students. It's been fun to see.
All right. Thanks, Erica. We'll talk to you. We'll check in with you again on Tuesday. We won't be doing the show on Monday because of the assembly meeting, but.
Sounds good. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you. All right. 772-3808 is our phone number. We do have a couple of other callers here. And I believe Liz Bacom, line three, you're joining the conversation.
Hi, thanks for letting me join.
Yes.
I just wanted to get the word out about the fabric masks. And there's been, there's been a lot of changes with the guidelines that we've been given to use for handling PPE for how this virus reacts. On December 30th, going back a little over 3 months, there were no reports about this virus anywhere. On the 31st, they started reporting. So that's, and if you think about all the things that have changed in the last 3 months, it's just, it's overwhelming, really. And so 3 weeks ago, we were told fabric masks should not be used, but 3 weeks ago, things were different in this country than they are now. And so we're looking at scarce resources and how can we preserve the hospital-grade PPE for hospital use, and in what situations can we use the fabric masks? And then now just this last day or two, maybe everybody out in the public should be wearing them. So we're trying to keep up with all those changes, and I just want to assure people that we are using the state of Alaska and the CDC as our guides for providing information to the public, with the understanding that the virus doesn't read the book, and we have to do our best to figure out what that virus is thinking about doing next to us. We have a pattern out, and it'll be on our hospital public website. I'll get a copy to you guys so you can post it on KFSK. It's also on the Facebook COVID page. There are a lot of different mask styles out there that people may want to use, but we're encouraging people to use the same pattern. And the reason is that if people are in the hospital using these masks, they want to grab a mask. They don't want to have to think about, okay, what style is this? What do I do? And they all should be pretty consistent. They can either be a strap and tie, or they can be elastic. The pattern instructions provide how to use either way of making the mask, either with a band or with ties. And every mask that is worn protects the person that's wearing it and protects the rest of us, too. So they make a difference. And masks have been around for a long time, and I'm afraid we're probably going to be seeing them in town. So I'll put a challenge out to the community. If you're going to make a mask that is going to protect us and protect you, have some fun with it, and maybe we'll have a contest, a web-based contest, and see who has the most creative mask. Garnish it with sequins or whatever. But like Jennifer says, it needs to be able to be washed in hot water, so you don't want those things to fall off. One of the other things, you know, I just want to give a shout-out to the businesses that are going, you know, in such a big way to deliver or curbside pickup, and that's really appreciated. I'm out at 10 Mile, and we've had the grocery stores deliver to us, and it's just been a great service. And some people have concerns about, are my groceries safe? Do I need to wash them off, or what do I need to do? And the CDC has some guidelines for cleaning food, for example. And so the first thing is when you get your bags of groceries, you want to have clean hands to start out with. Take everything out of those bags, and anything that's produce, you want to rinse that off really well with running water and let it dry before you bag it up and put it in the refrigerator. The likelihood of this virus surviving on produce is pretty minimal, but it doesn't hurt to wash everything off. And then anything in your kitchen, you want to wash your utensils and cutting boards and all that, you want to wash with hot soapy water. And you don't want to cross-contaminate, because COVID isn't the only thing that's out there. You just food safety, common sense, and good practices. Raw meat and seafood and eggs can spread germs. So you want to make sure that anything you're using with that, you don't also turn around and handle produce that's going to be eaten raw, because there could be some bacteria on the food. We don't want to lose sight of all the other things that could be causing us to get sick. And then always cook to the correct temperature, too. You know, if it says to cook, you know, poultry to 165, for example, or, you know, make sure your leftovers and casseroles are cooked to the right temperature. But the CDC has a really good website. I can send you that link and let people know about that. And the other thing is disinfection of your high-touch objects or high-touch surfaces. So if you look around, wherever you're sitting, I'm sitting at my work desk at home, and I've got a computer, I've got my keyboard, I've got my phone, there's my coffee cup, there's a mouse, there's the table that I'm working at. And so those are things that I'm touching frequently, and so one of the good practices is to clean those areas that you touch frequently. It depends on what you're cleaning with and what you're cleaning. So, for example, solid surfaces like laminated surfaces, you can use a bleach solution. And a bleach solution recipe is 4 teaspoons of bleach to 1/4 of water. And the bleach should be standard bleach. It should not have any additives or scents added to it. It should be a plain ordinary Clorox bleach. And the bleach itself generally has a pretty long outdate, but you want to make sure it's not expired. And then when you mix it with water, it's only stable for about 24 hours, because the molecule can break down pretty easily, and then it wouldn't be any effective for cleaning. Some surfaces you can't use bleach water on, for example, granite or leather. So, you know, some things you wouldn't want to do that with, so you sort of have to do a little research to find out how best. But high-touch objects are like door handles, countertops. You know, just walk through your house and just look at everything you touch as you enter the home, or if you go into a business. Those are the things that you want to clean frequently. And especially out in public and businesses, it's really hard for them. They're working in a different environment. You know, they may be short-staffed or they may be doing more different kinds of things. And so if they do have customers coming in, they make the effort to try to make sure that either wipes are there at the entrance so people can clean their grocery carts or whatever, because those hard surfaces, the virus can survive 3 days, and is what we're learning about this. And so if somebody just walked out and they you didn't clean the cart, there's a chance that you could pick it up on your hands. Having it on your hands by itself, you can wash your hands and get it out, get rid of it. But if you touch your face, your eyes, nose, mouth, then you have the opportunity of inviting that virus into your body. So it's really important that the face isn't, you know, you try to maintain that as a safe zone, that you don't touch it. So that's just, I wanted to talk about environmental cleaning and food safety. And if anybody has any questions, they can contact the hospital at my number at work. And that number is 772-5545.
5545. Great. Thank you, Liz.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think we have a couple other callers here. Let's see, caller on line two, Tanya Grant, welcome to the conversation. You have a question or comment?
I guess a little bit of both. It was about the dogs around town. What are they doing to keep us safe that way? Because I see dogs running around and not on leash when they're with their owners, and I've even seen dogs in businesses, and like anybody could touch a dog and pass it along that way. Is there something being enforced about that? Because that's just not safe, especially to have it in a business as well.
Good question. Maybe I'll put that to borough officials when we get them back on the line at some point too, or for next week. But good point, good question. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
And 772-3808 is our phone number. One more caller here. I believe this is Liz Cabrera with Petersburg Borough. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Joe. Hey, I just wanted to call in and let business owners and nonprofits know that today is the first day where you can apply for that Paycheck Protection Program, that loan program that is in that federal stimulus bill. And I have to say that banks are working really hard to try and stand up that program. They weren't given very much notice that suddenly we were going to do this huge new loan program, but First Bank locally has a link on their website where you can start that application process. I believe Alps and Wells Fargo will have something ready to go next week. The other banks in Alaska, North Rim Bank and Key Bank, I think they have pages ready to go where you can start an application process. And then on the borough website, on that resources for business and employees, we have a fact sheet, the application, and some other information, especially information on the type of documentation you might need in order to get ready to apply for that loan. The applications are being accepted through June 30th, but I would encourage people not to wait. There is a finite amount of funding for this program, and my guess it's going to be very popular. And then just to pass on a tip that a business owner gave me, which is that they are setting up a special account with whatever bank they borrow the money from, and they are only using that account to pay for payroll and the allowed uses for the money. And that way, when it comes time to request the forgiveness for the loan, they have all the documentation all in one account. So I'll just pass that on if that is helpful.
Liz, is the application pretty involved?
The initial application is not very involved. This is constantly evolving, so I say that with like an asterisk next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then banks, they have certain things that they want to see, and basically it's going to be documentation of payroll, and then you'll also need you know, the organizing documents for your corporation, or in the case of a nonprofit, you might need a resolution from your board of directors. So you really have to reach out to your bank or a bank and start the process and see what exactly they're going to require.
From what you've heard, are many businesses and nonprofits looking into this in town?
I've spoken to about half a dozen so far, just asking questions and putting out information. So that's what I've heard.
Okay.
And then just to follow up on a question that you asked, I think last time I spoke to you, which was unemployment for self-employed people.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Alaska did set up an agreement with the federal government to extend unemployment to self-employed, but it's a whole separate system, and so it's going to take 3 to 4 weeks for them to stand up that separate unemployment benefit system. So,
okay. Does that include fishermen who might be impacted by a loss of markets through COVID-19 problems, or...?
I'm not sure. That's all the information I have, but I can continue following up with those types of questions and get back to you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Liz. Yeah.
Sure thing.
All right. Any final thoughts from the Petersburg Medical Center side of things?
I think we're good, Joe. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Just a reminder, we won't be talking to you again on Monday because of the Borough Assembly meeting, but I think, Phil, you'll be reporting to the Assembly at that point anyway, so...
Yep.
We'll hear from you then. Okay, we'll be back with our next show on COVID-19 preparation in Petersburg on Tuesday.